Front program. Thrill. Cast. Loading. 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 Telescopic lens. Test. Loading. Loading. Typo check. Error. Cash curl routine. Loading. Loading. Interview protocols. Loading. Loading. Speech operating system. Error. 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 Error.
Apologies, Earthlets. A virus is making its way through the droid subroutines at the moment in the 2018 Nerve Center. So I'm sorry if I'm a bit coffee or grating or bunged up over the course of this Thrillcast. But welcome. I am Molchar, your malfunctioning host. And it's great to welcome you back to the 2018 podcast. We've got a couple of guests on this week. We have Gordon Rennie. He's going to be talking about his series Angelic, which is running in the second series, of which is running in the magazine at the moment. And that is the origin story, kind of the Angel Gang, which I'm sure everyone who knows 2018 knows. But if you don't, then they were a series of characters who appeared and then were dispatched during the Judge Child quest back in the 80s. But have been revived multiple times over the course of the last 30-odd years. And the Angelic is something a bit different. It's not just a straight retelling of what we know about their origin. So, fascinating to hear what Gordon's got planned. We're also going to be talking to Michael Carroll. Beginning of next year, there's a collection called Judge Dredd, Every Empire Falls, which collects together his, what somebody called a stealth saga of Judge Dredd stories in which a weakened megacity one finds itself very vulnerable to those who wish to take advantage. A new series playing with those themes and ideas begins in 2000 AD and the Judge Dredd magazine in January. So we're going to be talking to him about his plans for that. You may have also seen that we have announced what's going to be happening with our 40th anniversary issue. Now, this will be dropping in February. It's a special, so it's not just a normal prog. And the lineup is absolutely incredible. We've got Judge Dredd, written by John Wagner. Nikolai Dante is returning for a special story. Robbie Morrison, Simon Fraser. We've got Slain by Pat Mills and Simon Davis. Robusters, Seeing Red by Pat Mills and Clint Langley. Zombo, which is Ali Ewing and Henry Flint's weaponized zombie is returning, and we've got a new creative team on the Durham Red, a story called Judas Strain by Lauren Bucas and Dale Halverson, which is being drawn by Carlos Esquerra. You may remember Lauren and Dale were our guests earlier this year on the Thrillcast, both big fans, and it's great to see them not only coming to 2000 AD to write for us, but also helping revive Durham Red, one of our very popular characters. So the 40th anniversary issue will be out in February in print and digital. And also, you can expect to see work from Jock, Dave Gibbons and Brian Talbot in that issue. So definitely one to grab hold of. Speaking of our 40th anniversary, if you have not bought your tickets for the 40th anniversary convention on the 11th of February, taking place at Hammersmith in London, then do so at once. It's an incredible lineup of characters. We're going to have panels. We're going to have various things are happening on the day. Don't want to give away too much just yet because we've got some big announcements coming up over the next few weeks. So get along to 2000adonline.com/40years. That's 40 years. And make sure you book your tickets for what promises to be the galaxy's greatest show. So let's get on with the interviews. Our chat with Gordon Rennie about Angelic comes at a good time because Fink Angel Legacy is a new collection that's out this month and collects together the Fink stories as well as the stories of his son, Rat Fink. Angel Gang, very, very popular series of characters. So popular, in fact, that they were revived from the grave after the Judge Child quest. Angelic is running in the Judge Dredd magazine at the moment, and it's all about evil and how people become the psychopaths that we know, but perhaps in a new and surprising way, and really takes the character of Power Angel, which Gordon will talk about in a minute, and does something a little bit different. Great artwork by Lee Carter, really atmospheric. It's great to welcome Gordon back onto the Thrillcast.
Oh, hi, mate. Hi, thanks.
No worries. So, Angelic, talk about the origin of this series, because I was talking to Matt, our editor, and he said that you drew some inspiration from the Hannibal TV series.
Yeah, that's right. I was a big fan of Hannibal. Well, up until the third series when I absolutely lost the plot of what was going on. But I like the idea that they played about with continuity really early on. In the first series, there's little hints that it wasn't actually in continuity with the what we knew from the movies. Mm. One character changed gender, one character changed race, but these are for minor things. The second series became really obvious where it was going off in its own continuity, completely in an alternate timeline.
Yeah.
And I thought it'd be interesting to do that with a character in 2000 AD, one that's been, I think, not particularly well served, in the past. So I decided in the Angel Gang, and specifically at Pat Angel. Mm. They've always been kind of, comedy redneck psychos, and that kind of ran into the ground, I think, in the end, which is why we've not seen them in years and years, and I think John's pensioned or killed them all off. So I wanted to go back to the origins of them and try and do it a different take. Basically do Pat Angel as the hero, not the villain.
Right, okay. Because you did a whole slew of Mean Machine Angel stories.
It was Mean Machine. Yeah, they were just in the usual kind of like comedy psycho vein. Mm. I think that's played out with those characters now. I'd like to do something more sort of mature and serious and interesting with them.
Sure. And so far, we've only met Power Angel. And
he's not even called. He's never ever called Pat Angel. You don't see the scripts, of course. Don't. He's just called Angel. So it's an important differentiation. That word, I don't know. that we don't call him that. He's not necessarily Pat Angel. He's just Angel or Mr. Angel. I don't actually like calling him Pat Angel at all. I know it's people do it in reviews. Naturally, of course, they do. But he's not actually Pat Angel. He's someone slightly different.
Right. Okay.
If that makes sense.
Well, I mean, to a certain extent, the family isn't together yet. He's not yet the patriarch of that family.
He's just a different character. He's not the kind of horrible, evil, psychotic patriarch we see later on, and he might not become that character.
Right.
Which is an important thing in the story as well. It's an alternate timeline where these things might not happen.
Well, that's an interesting angle. The idea of not humanizing these characters, but explaining them to a certain extent.
Yes, I wanted to do. I wanted to show why he might have become like that. It's all about family and his background, which he's lost his memories. He's a Texas City gangster who was shot in the head by corrupt judges and has basically lost his memories, rebuilding his life and rebuilding a family that he's lost as well in Texas City. His wife and child were killed. So he's basically searching for a new family. So that's the sort of that's the core of the character, is family and protecting those around him, which makes him a much more human character.
Yeah, even when sort of bringing that family together essentially brings together some of the most evil people you can imagine.
Well, it might go that way, or it might not.
Okay. Interesting.
This isn't the definitive origin of the Angel family, which is why even the title is angelic, is angel-like, is what angelic means, not necessarily an angel.
Right. Okay. So you can't really dismiss the series of going, well, we know how that ends up, because as far as you're concerned, it might not go that way.
In the very first series, there's a psyker character who can see the future, but he says the future's changing. He sees the judge child and things like that, but it's all shifting. It might not happen that way.
Okay.
Which is the purpose of the story.
Because this isn't your first rodeo, so to speak. You've done a lot of series set in this kind of pseudo Wild West of the Cursed Earth, and bringing in elements from Texas City, because you did Missionary Man and Cursed Earth Coburn and things like that. So explain what your fascination is, not just with the Cursed Earth, but with this kind of southern stereotype of lawless rednecks.
I don't know if it's a fascination, but I do keep on coming back to it. I mean, I've always, as you point out, there's always been a, I've always done a series set in that, you know, milieu. My rule is only to do one at a time, so I didn't do, never did Mystery Man, Cursed Earth, Coburn at the time. Cursed Earth, Coburn's been pensioned off, and we never get Angelic. The rule is never do more than one of these series at a time.
Right, right.
I don't know why I keep on coming back to it, to be honest. I do like the Cursed Earth as a setting, so I've always, from the very beginning of my work for 2000 AD, the magazine, I've always been in the Cursed Earth. I like it's a sort of primal, apocalyptic, almost Old Testament-like landscape, which I think Westerns are very much about as well.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? That so many of the tropes of the Cursed Earth are now essentially Western tropes. It used to be a place where anything went. So you'd have dinosaurs and volcanoes, and then, you know, glass cities that melted and things like that. But now it's very firmly a kind of future Wild West.
Yeah. John Wagner, Pat Mills made it kind of crazy and weird, but John kind of roped it into a very much a Western setting. There's, you know, settlements and plantations and you know, herds of animals being, you know, with cowboys and things like that.
And with the Angel Gang, I mean, you mentioned earlier about the fact you don't think they've been particularly well served. What is it about the characters of the Angel Gang that you like?
Well, I always did quite like the comedy redneck thing, but that only went so far. I think with Mean Machine, and I'm part of the problem, he tipped too far into comedy. He just became a caricature, really. He's not a particularly deep character, to be fair, you know, so I think it was fair enough when John pensioned him off in the strip. But we don't really know much about the rest of the Angel Gang, which is why I wanted to go back to them. Especially with Pa, who's, you know, it just seems to be this horrible, evil patriarch, and I thought I wanted to do more with them.
Is the extreme violence and the viciousness of them, is that an appealing thing as a writer, that you can kind of let loose and do really quite nasty things?
It is a violent strip. The first series is very violent. Pa gets, or Angel gets tortured, and the second series he meets this other family who are basically a future version of the Angel. He's seeing a vision of his own future.
Right.
They're basically the Angel Gang, and he gets very nasty towards the end. He's a very, very violent character. I mean, that's why he becomes what he becomes. But at the moment, he has this moral core that reigns in the violence, or gives it a reason.
Okay.
He only does nasty things to people who are worse than him at the moment. that's how he stays on the side of the Angels.
Right. Okay. So is it a kind of the more you kind of, you know, tread in the mud, the muddier you get kind of thing?
Yes. Yeah. So whether you see which way he'll fall in the end,
right,
okay, or if he will fall.
Let's talk a little bit about Lee Carter's artwork on the series, because he's got quite he has a unique style in that he uses computers, but it doesn't result in things feeling all that stiff. You know, there's a lot of detail.
It doesn't look all Photoshoppy, which you know, some of this, that kind of artwork does, I feel. It's been great working with Lee. He mapped out the entire the second series takes a lot of it takes place in this ranch where the bad guys live, the Creek family, who are this surrogate angel family, and he mapped out the entire thing digitally. He built it as a digital model, so I thought, well, we better start using this if he's put hours and hours in to build this thing. So that was very impressive, and I could actually see the what the setting looked like, you know, before I think I'd done the first episode by this point, but the remaining episodes I could see what the location looked like, which was really impressive. No, it's great working with Lee. I hadn't worked with him in comics before. I'd worked with him in computer games. He used to work at a games company in Liverpool as an artist who I did some work for there, so that's how I got to know him. And then I knew he wanted to do comics. And there is doing comics, so good for him. It started with, I talked to him, he produced this amazing sketch character concept for him, and it was basically Yojimbo, or no, it wasn't Yojimbo, it was Baby Cart. It was this old kind of warrior kite guy carrying a kid in his shoulders, and that was Angel and his adopted son Link. So that was kind of like the samurai with baby kind of feel we're going for. And that's what really sparked it all off in my imagination after talking to him about it.
Because I mean, that's the opening page of the first episode of the first series.
Yes, that was going to be the image that really sort of defined the story, I thought.
With Lee's stuff, as the first series went on, and now that we're into the second, are you both on the same page, kind of thing? You know, have you now developed enough of a working relationship where you can kind of trust him to deliver that world without much direction?
Yeah. The artists I tend to work with more and more, that's how I got on with them. You know, I just kind of trust him to go on with it. My scripts aren't super detailed. I kind of know what they're going to produce. I trust them, you know, people like PG Holden. Well, not PG, I'm always disparaging PG, but rightly so, he's terrible. And Tiernan Trevelyan, you know, people like him. And Simon Colby, people like I like to work with again and again. I just going to write the scripts and I know what they're going to produce. I'm pretty confident in them.
I'm curious, you mentioned just now about Lee mapping out the environment. I'm curious what effect that had on you as a writer, because normally, you know, you carry this stuff in your head, or, you know, I don't know if you sketch a rough idea of where things are out just in case it gets too complicated. But what was the effect of actually being able to see and walk through the environment on the way that you wrote the series?
Normally sometimes there's a problem kind of choreographing action when you don't actually know what the scene's going to look like. It was much easier this one, especially in the last episode of the current series. There's quite a bit of choreographed action, and I had to know who was where, and the model was really, really useful in that respect. Even I think I added something into it that wasn't the original model. We'll see if anyone notices it appears between episodes.
One thing I was curious about when I was just sort of coming up with some questions was, Judge Dredd especially has almost 40 years of continuity behind it, which you know, John and Alan and various other people have either played on or ignored or twisted or whatever. Is there sometimes a risk that by going back you're just kind of churning over you know, the same characters? Because as you say, that you felt the Angel characters have been played out. Can you return too often to the source?
Yes, you can. I'm trying not to do in this, but basically we're erasing continuity. I know people will run screaming to the hills at the sound of that. And kind of rewriting it. As I say, things won't happen the way you think they're going to happen, I think, in Angelic.
Right.
Or it might be an alternate timeline. There's a saying that I heard once about comics, and someone says continuity ties your best writers to your worst writers. You know, you're obliged to. So I don't necessarily feel bound by that.
Okay. And looking aside from Angelic for a moment, more Absalom in the future?
Yes, there's a collection out next year, so we better finish it off, I think. It looks like it's heading towards a conclusion, Absalom.
Okay.
Tiernan and I have talked about it. I know he's doing something else at the moment, and I'm doing about 16 other things, but it will see a conclusion in the, you know, in the foreseeable future. And we'll pension off old Harry, you know, send him off to his dotage.
I mean, is that important for you as a writer to be able to kind of shuttle these people off and park them somewhere?
I don't know. There's this terrible fear of going on and on and just writing the same thing over and over again. I think stories should have a conclusion if need be. I think we've talked about this before. Maybe I go too far too and just like kill off strips and move on to new things too much, but I don't want to be writing Absalom 20 years from now, because that would be awful.
The last time we talked, I think, you mentioned about how you were walking away from Dreadworld stuff, because you part Cursed Earth Coben, you weren't going to be writing Judge Dredd anymore. And yet you know, Angelic is still set in that world. It's still got judges. It's still, you know, part of that universe.
It's its own separate continuity. It's my little sub-universe.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily... And because it's set in the past as well, it's not affected by any, you know, giant mega events are going to happen.
Right. Okay. So even though you've got actual judges walking around, it's a different world.
There's judges in the first season. I'm not That's anticipating good. Seeing many judges now on.
Right. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. Well, lovely. Well, thank you very much for coming on the Thrillcast again, Gordon. Really for enjoying sure. Angelic, and having just revisited all of the Angel Gang stuff when I was writing a feature, it's going to be interesting to see where you take it. Many thanks to Gordon for that. Now, talking about Texas City, it seems to be in vogue at the moment because Michael Carroll's Every Empire Falls is a collection that's out at the beginning of next year, which collects together his stories from... earlier this year, in which Mega City One found itself the victim of an attempted coup. If you've not read it, then I really do recommend either going to your back issues or picking up Every Empire Falls, because it's very interesting to see a relatively new writer to 2080 doing something interesting and different with the post Day of Chaos world in Judge Dredd. So just in time for Every Empire Falls to come out in paperback on both sides of the Atlantic, a new series by Michael Carroll begins in 2000 AD with an accompanying story in the magazine where he's kind of picking up some of the threads of that. And so, really pleased to be able to welcome Michael onto the Thrillcast to explain and to talk a little bit more about it. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you very much, Michael. It's lovely to be here.
Excellent. So we're looking a bit ahead. We're still just at the end of November, but we're looking ahead to January when you have a new Dredd story coming out. Do you want to just tell us kind of like the elevator pitch for this new series?
Yeah, the elevator pitch it follows on from the Every Empire Falls saga, or as someone else called it online, the Stealth Saga, because we kind of stuck that in without people realizing. So yeah, we didn't pre-announce that one, and this is it's an eight episode tale, but it's broken up into smaller parts, and it basically brings Dredd back to Texas City to sort out a few things. Well, you know how spoiler phobic I am. I don't want to give away too much, but I will say that it introduces a brand new character who I had an absolute ball writing, and If everybody else doesn't adore her, then they're wrong and I'm right. I think. So it's a one-off. Well, it's a short-term character, but we'll see what happens. And obviously, she should get her own TV show and so forth, and I could get money. But so that's one of the things that happens. But effectively, we're going back to Texas City. So that's the key. Here.
Okay. And you mentioned the Every Empire Falls epic serial, whatever you want to call it. It's coming out. This new series starts just in time for the collection of Every Empire Falls coming out in paperback. For those who haven't read it or don't remember all the details, do you want to just kind of summarize roughly what happened in those kind of interconnected stories?
Yeah, sure. The collection was the idea was that it. The Mighty Tharg contacted me and said, you know, we wanted to do a Dredd story that crossed over into the magazine. But as previous older readers will recall, crossovers with the magazine and the book can be tricky, partly because of a schedule thing. If an issue of the mag is delayed by a bit or something, then, you know, you get problems with the stories appearing out of order. Now, Mike, you're probably way too young to remember a story called Judgment Day, way, way back.
But barely, is it like early childhood?
Yes. Well, Judgment Day was a great story. I love it to bits, but it was nightmare when it was coming out. The magazine was fortnightly at the time. So every 2 weeks we got a new magazine with certain episodes. It was, you know, an episode of the of the Judgment Day story, and every other week, every actual week, we got the Progs with other episodes. And over here in Ireland, you know, the distribution wasn't as slick as we might have liked. So it just got to the stage where about halfway through, I just gave up reading it and just waited until it was all done and then read them all in one go, because I was really crying with frustration going, but how can this be? You're jumping ahead an episode and I have to wait till, you know, the new issue comes in. And but anyway, we didn't want that to happen with the new epic. So the idea was to have to split the story into two streams. So we get to the end of a five-parter in the prog called the Grindstone Cowboys. And then something happens. Everybody probably knows, but I won't spoil it anyway, just in case. But from that point on, the story splits into two separate streams, one in the magazine and one in the prog. So the magazine story follows Judge Rico primarily, and which was my first chance to write him, which was a lot of fun because he's kind of like a mini Dread. He's like Dread without the grizzle. At least we've got so much of the nastiness. And then the prog story follows Judge Joyce, who is my own creation, mostly. And so that gave us two separate stories that then sort of link up at the end. So it was actually a lot of fun to plan out and you know, figure out how it all joins up. And of course, part of the story is that Dredd seemingly gets killed. Because we all know, I mean, he's a comic book character, you know, no one ever really dies in the comics except for Mark One. Yes, can't think of anybody else who ever actually died. Wolf died, yes, and didn't come back. So, so that kept Dredd out of the picture for a few weeks, which was interesting to see. Can we carry on? Can we have Jewish Dredd stories that don't have Jewish Dredd in them? Is it actually feasible? And it seems to be. So there you go. Maybe the old man isn't so indispensable after all. Dun, dun, dun. Is that a hint for what's coming up? No.
Right, okay.
So, it's 22. The Empire Falls comes to 22 episodes, 148 pages. So it was the longest Dredd thing I've written. But since it was in little chunks, it wasn't too bad. It was tough going from some point.
You mentioned that somebody described it as a stealth saga. Do you think it that is a better way of doing it? Because when you say, it's going to be this big epic, and people kind of expect a Day of Chaos style, mega event. Is it easier for you as a writer to kind of sneak it under the radar to a certain extent?
Well, I think so, yeah. I mean, not in terms of thinking it past the editorial into under the radar, because obviously the Mighty Tharg knows all and sees all. But in terms of with the readers and the fans, if you announce to the fans that there's going to be a big epic, they will sit there with their breath held going, go on then, entertain me. But if you do slide it in and people realize sort of after the fact that it's something big, then it's a lot easier. I mean, we saw that perfectly with Trifecta a couple of years ago, which is, to my mind, one of the greatest Dredd stories ever. And, even though I knew what was coming, because Adium had spilled the beans, I knew it was coming up, and it was still amazingly well done, because nobody knew in advance. You don't have to pre-announce everything. Sometimes it's nice to give the readers a little surprise when they realize that stories are connected, or that there's something that they not really notice has been bubbling under for a long time. So it's from a writer's point of view, it's also pretty cool as well. You don't want all your stories spoiled. Sometimes you want the readers to have no idea at all what's coming up.
Do you see this new story as expanding enough to complement Every Empire Falls in a collection of its own?
Not yet. This is only eight episodes. There's also a two-part story happening in the magazine. It's a little sort of coda to what's going on. There is something I could say, but it would be a spoiler even if I only gave a hint about it. Let's just say that it's why do you put me on the spot like this? it's stories that do follow on logically from something, if you see what I mean. But I can't say too much. I mean, I probably would be fired and or shot or both if I gave away too much. But it's
fired out of a cannon and then shot in midair.
It's a logical progression of what one's gone before. That's all I can say. The end.
No, it takes place in Texas. In Texas City. We've just been talking to Gordon about his fascination with the cursed earth and with the kind of redneck way of doing characters, where sometimes characters can be very one dimensional and based on in the grand Judge Dredd scheme of things, British stereotypes about foreign people.
Yes.
So you've only got to look at the way that things like Judge Dredd Crusade did a lot of the kind of foreign stereotypes as character sheets, essentially. To see that sometimes it can be a little ham-fisted. It can be a bit too on the nose. Do you think you've managed to avoid that with the kind of Texas characters, Texas City characters that you've been writing in this series?
Oh, I think so. It is very tempting with a Texas City character to give him a 10-gallon hat and have him say yeehaw and choose good up in the air an awful lot. And to be honest, as a joke in the script, it's something that doesn't actually appear on Texas. There's a character who in the first episode of the news story. Who basically is I call him Rodeo Q Hoedown. He basically looks like Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard, but that's just in the panel descriptions. He's not a major character by any means, but sometimes you throw that sort of thing in just for fun. You can't actually call a character Rodeo Q Hoedown and tell he's a Texan unless you never want to visit Texas ever in your entire life, you know, which I do want to go there one day. But with any nationality, it's really hard, not to have your Scots character say, okay, dialogue courtesy of Woolly 1977. It's really hard not to have British characters saying Cor Blimey and Stone and Ver Bleeding Crows, mate, which actually I did a bit of in the... in the Every Empire Falls saga, when what's his name, Judge Joyce is in London, and he can nearly get run over by a bus, the robot bus driver has to get after OG bleeding Muppet, you know. I can't do the accents, but it's hard enough to do that sometimes just for fun. But if every character is like that, then it becomes jingoistic, and it's a bit dangerous. I know certainly. In the past, in 2008, there have been cases where certain stereotypes that are not acceptable now were perfectly fine then. We refer to the Blakey Pentax notion. You possibly remember that one. So anybody who was not Caucasian and British and or American tended to be treated with, shall we say, ham-fisted kid gloves, you know? I mean, let's face it, the first Emerald Isle story, even though it was written by an Irishman and drawn by one Irishman, Will Simpson, and another Englishman who lived in Ireland, that's still incredibly racist in terms of, you know, the way the Irish people are treated. One of the reasons I wanted to go back to the Emerald Isle story was to sort that one out. I mean, the sport gun, let's be honest, that's, you know, that was just, it was funny. And we thought it was hilarious, but at the same time, we're going, here, lads.
that's interesting. Because do you think that it does make a difference if a character that plays on national stereotypes is written by somebody of that nationality?
Yeah, I think it does. I know it doesn't. The character doesn't have to be written by someone of the nationality for it to be a good character. But yeah, I think it makes a difference. I mean, for example, with the Emerald Isle stuff, I gave young Judge Joyce, the Judge Joyce Jr., I gave him what I'd say to be a more rounded Irish personality. I mean, basically, he's a bit sarcastic. He's good at his job, but that's because he's a judge, not because he's Irish. He's a bit sarcastic, and everywhere he goes, he seems to meet someone that he knows. And that's certainly true of any Irish person I've ever met. I mean, you know, I was in New York and I met a guy from primary school who I hadn't seen in like 30 years. And like, oh, there's so-and-so. Ah, oh, grand, I was just chatting to him as if I'd only met him the day before.
Right.
So things like that happen in real life. And the Irish people tend to be very laid back, but we don't, oddly enough, we don't talk about leprechauns and Guinness, and we don't say BJ's and Bigora, and we don't say that dreads the queer fella and thing. Nobody talks like that to paraphrase that great movie. Something like that. But so imagine if I was writing a Scots person, I'd have to be careful not to make him too stereotypical. But Gordon, who I believe is actually Scottish, and nothing wrong with that. Nobody has to die because of it. He's a nice fella, I imagine. But, I mean, he would have a much better idea of exactly how a Scots person would be, whereas I'd still only have my second-hand interpretation.
Mm.
So that said, we're a very small nation over here in Ireland, so if we're writing about Americans, we're more likely to get it right than Americans writing about us, because they only have the stereotypes that go on. We have a huge amount of American culture that we can draw upon. Mm.
Talking about that, do you think with Texas, because of its the stereotype of it being independently minded, obsessed with guns and eating meat and all the same other, do you think it's very easy to make them the bad guys in a story?
Yes, it is, and that's something that I definitely tried to look at with these stories. Is that individually, yes, they can be bad or good, but as a whole, I mean, the Texan people don't know what's going on outside Texas any more than the average person knows what's going on outside their own town. You only have a glimpse of it. So it's easy to make them the bad guys, but I can't say who the bad guys are in this lot yet. But There is one of these stories, which I've actually got it online. I can't remember the titles of anything. I'm so bad these days, won't know me. There's one of these stories within this new bunch where we go a bit outside Texas to something that's quite extreme. And it's the people who we present as the bad guys don't see themselves as the bad guys. Because that's probably true of all the baddies. All the best baddies don't know they're evil.
Mm.
I've had in my mind for a long time. In my superhero books and things like that, the villains think they're the good guys. They think that what they're doing is right, and that's usually the best way. I mean, nobody sits there in real life rubbing their hands together, going "ha ha ha, ha I'm evil." It's very few of us do. So it's in this case with the Texans, there's a few of them who are bad and a few of them who are good, but of course it all depends on where you're standing.
The stories you did about the rebuilding of Megacity 2 and now this one where, spoilers for anybody who's listening, spoilers, where Megacity 1 have essentially imposed their own choice of administration on Texas City after the failed coup. It feels very much like you're kind of picking up some of the threads, some of the pieces left by John Wagner after the Day of Chaos, and deciding that the interesting stuff is happening outside of the city to a certain extent.
Yeah, well, I think that's important because it's very easy for the people in Megacity 1, for example, to assume that Megacity 1 is Earth.
Mm.
We learn this in Ireland. We're very much aware of this from because we're sort of the small nation looking in at the rest of the world. We go, I'm assuming you people over in Britland as well get this, where you look at the Americans, you go see the Americans, America is not Earth. There is more going on. So with Megacity 1, yes, terrible things happen. It's chaotic. It's awful. Everything bad ever happens to Megacity 1 because there's a giant evil lodestone underneath the city that draws all the evil to it or something. No, there isn't, but there will be. I'm putting that in. So I thought, well, when I was looking at the story to begin with, I just thought, well, what about Texas City? I mean, they did nothing to help Megacity 1 during the Apocalypse War. Nor to Megacity 2, but they're not really a go concern. So I said to myself, well, it's a huge city. It was Megacity 3 at one point. So there's obviously hundreds of millions of people there doing nothing, having going on with their own lives. Well, you know, let's draw them back into Dredd's world. I mean, it's odd for that Dredd can go off to other planets and so on, but doesn't actually visit his city next door too often. So I decided that's where we go. And then, of course, when we get to the idea that Megacity 1 Megacity 3/Texas City is kind of isolationist, then we have to see, well, why are they like that? And they're like that because they believe that they're right about everything and that they're the best. I mean, obviously not individually, but collectively, in the same way that the Americans, the modern day Americans, bless them, much as we love them, they will do things like talk about America as being the leader of the free world, and the rest of the free world is going, sorry, you're who again? Why are you the leader all of a sudden? So same kind of process. It's the egocentric thing that a lot of big nations have. When you've got the biggest stake, you think that you're the one who's in charge. Everybody else is going, well, you might have the bigger stake, but, you know, we're sitting over here, you know, with our nuclear weapons and so forth. We might not be the biggest, but we might be have the most power. So again, it's a matter of where you stand.
Well, it's an interesting foil to the stuff that I think Gordon was doing in around about the 2000s, which was Megacity One projecting its power onto other cities. So you had regime change, which was all about them influencing both subtly and not so subtly their sphere of influence in the Americas. Whereas now a much more weakened Megacity One is having to deal with a world that's actually a lot more hostile to it.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's because everything that Megacity One has done is now starting to come back to them. And there's, you know, they basically get payback for all of the imposition that they've imposed. Can't impose an imposition. Well, they're that thing on the rest of the world. So that's why in a couple of times in my more recent stuff that, you know, it's been mentioned that Megacity One does not have the teeth that it once had. Mm. However, situation, again, spoilers for those people who've not yet read The Empire Falls. What's going to happen is Megacity One is, they were in a very weak position. Megacity 3 or Texas City tried to take over. Mm. And that coup utterly failed to the point where now Texas City effectively is in the hands of Megacity One. So Megacity One does have some teeth again. Not quite its own teeth, but it has teeth of some kind. But as yet, no one really knows. So, I mean, obviously I'm playing a very, very long game here. At some point, Megacity One will obviously return to being quite powerful. Because otherwise they'd be just underdogs forever, and we can't have that. Mm. So, if a city, you know, that was powerful then falls and then returns to power, do they still have the same arrogance that they had before, or are they more arrogant? And that's what we need to explore in coming years, assuming that I'm allowed to.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Was not many writers have had the opportunity to actually do long form storytelling because John's always been the primary, apart from the phase in the 90s where it was Garth. John's always been the primary writer, often with Alan on Judge Dredd. But having the space to develop these threads must be quite, I don't know, is it a blessing or is it a curse?
I think it's both. It's a poison chalice, but nevertheless, the chalice is made of chocolate, which is nice. It's a curse in a way because I'm still standing on the shoulders of giants here, and I'm not necessarily facing in the right direction. With John, I mean, I still don't know. I mean, John could turn around and destroy everything that I've been setting up. I've got a lot of things like bubbling under, I think a lot of writers do. Things that, you know, if they come to fruition, then I can look back to the past and say, see, that's where I set the seeds. If they don't come to fruition, I just say nothing. It's possible John could turn around and change absolutely everything. And in some ways he did that with Day of Chaos. I had a few things on the boil and Day of Chaos came along and messed things up. But from the ashes of that, I got some, well, you know, the ashes lead to very fertile soil, if you like. So I got some much better stories than I would have otherwise. But he could turn around and do it again. And that's, well, I mean, I don't think he would do it maliciously. But I think he might, you know, he's not necessarily going to ask our permission, but we would have to ask his if we want to do something drastic. Mm. So I think it's yeah, it might happen that John will change things, and that's fine. I'm happy with that, because you know, opportunity or chaos brings opportunity. So as we saw, actually very literally with the Day of Chaos.
You mentioned a new character, and without going into the specifics of them, I guess that's also a sign of a certain degree of freedom within, as being with being a Judge Dredd writer, is the ability to introduce supporting characters. And it's been fascinating over the last couple of decades to see yourself and Rob Williams and Cy Spurrier and you know, various other writers, Al Ewing, various other writers introduce their own little casts of supporting characters, so they don't necessarily have to play with John's toys. They've got their own toy box to play in.
Well, that's true. We kind of, in a way, we kind of have to do that because we don't know what John's planning. John could come up with, you know, he could kill off one of his characters. I mean, he might kill off, say, Judge Beanie, for example, which means that, you know, we can't necessarily, I don't think he will, but we can't necessarily write stories using her. That said, with the Every Empire Falls story, I got to use Beanie and Giant and people like that who I'd never had a chance to use before, because I asked permission. And I also got a chance to use Cursed Earth Coburn, who's been one of my favorite characters ever in the comic. So thank you, Gordon. Because Gordon's finished writing Coburn, so he said it was, you know, he was happy for me to take a poke at him. But it's with our own characters, I mean, yeah, we can take them further in a way, because we don't, because no one else is playing with them. Now, myself and Rob Williams have talked about this occasionally before, that we do need to, we should kind of collaborate a bit closer on these things. I mean, maybe I use one of his characters, he uses one of mine, or maybe I tie into one of his storylines a bit more carefully, because otherwise it can read like we're not paying attention to what's going on. I need to reference stuff that he does in the comic. He should reference stuff I do, and of course, same with all of the other writers. We need to be more cohesive, but at the same time, the fact that we are kind of fluid means that and there's no sort of overarching boss dictating exactly what can and can't be done. It gives us a lot more freedom, and that freedom allows us to come up with ideas that we otherwise wouldn't even dream of. I mean, for example, all the stuff that Rob did with Titan and Enceladus, or however you pronounce that. I mean, if we'd all had a big committee meeting and a big discussion about it, we would have said, oh, that might not be, you know, we might not want Megacity 1 to freeze, this kind of thing. And that would have been bad, because that was a great story. I mean, it's an amazing story. So the freedom allows us a certain amount of latitude. Yes, I suppose latitude. Yeah, and it gives us room to experiment where otherwise we mightn't. And from those experiments, sometimes we get good things.
So that's it for another 2080 Thrillcast. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. And thank you to everyone who not only has given some wonderful, wonderful feedback about the podcast, but also tunes in every 2 weeks and helps spread the word about the galaxy's greatest podcast. We shall be back in 2 weeks' time. So do not touch that dial, Earthlets. Stay with 2080, stay with the Thrillcast, and until next time, Splendid Verthrig. But wait, there's more. Don't forget that 2000 AD is published every Wednesday and is available in newsagents and comic book stores in the UK and around the world. It's also available digitally from 2000AD's web shop and apps. We have apps for Apple devices, Android devices, and Windows 10 devices. And if you buy any of our products on one of the apps, you can download it DRM-free. So no copyright protection on there to stop you reading it on other devices. Direct from the web shop when you use the same login. You can also go to the web shop and apps and get our latest collections. If you subscribe to the print edition of 2000 AD, then not only do you get it several days earlier through your letterbox, but you will beat the price rise. So make sure that you grab a subscription ASAP before the post-Prog 2000 price rise comes in. Also, if you go to our apps and subscribe to 2000 AD and or the Judge Dredd magazine, then you get access to a range of back issues plus a load of free comics. So make sure you go along to www.2000adonline.com and either click through to the shop and the subscriptions page or click on the relevant button for the apps. Also be sure to keep up with 2000 AD on our other social media. We are on Twitter as @2000AD. We are on Facebook. Just type in facebook.com/2000AD. We also have our YouTube channel where you can check out the latest Thrillcast, but also the 2000 AD ABC, the alphabetical journey through the galaxy's greatest comic, which goes out every week. And that is www.youtube.com/2000AD online. We're also on Instagram as Insta2000AD, and on all of these platforms you get not only the latest 2000 AD news but also competitions, lots of fun stuff from the archives and what's coming up. If you definitely want to keep up to date on what's happening with 2000 AD, make sure you sign up to the Thrill Mail, which goes out every Wednesday. If you go to www.2000adonline.com/thrillmail, that's all in word, thrillmail, thrillmail, and put your details in there, then you'll get a weekly thrillgasm into your inbox from the 2000 AD command module. That's all for this week. Splundig, Ver, Thrig, Earthlets.